Governor Snyder's new budget contains over $100 million for Healthy Michigan. It's a reminder. It's time for the state of Michigan to pony up some of the cost of operating that Medicaid expansion program, which has meant health insurance for some 600,000 lower-income people. With us now is Mary Ann Udall Phillips. She's with the Center for Healthcare Research and Transformation. Remind us again, Mary Ann, why is it the state has to now start paying for part of Healthy Michigan?
Under the Affordable Care Act, with the expansion of Medicaid, the federal government paid 100% of the cost for the first 3 years. Actually, for 2014, 15, and 16 calendar years. Starting this year, next budget year, the state has to start paying a little bit. We begin with a 95% federal contribution, 5% state. The year after that, the state has to pay 6%, 7%, and by 2020, it's a 10% match from the state to the federal government.
It's hard to believe that that we're at this point, that we're actually talking about this, that time has gone along. So it's a sliding kind of a thing.
Yes.
Is what the governor's proposed in his budget, is that enough to keep Healthy Michigan healthy?
Oh, yes, yes. So the state match, the $108 million, is actually matching $3.4 billion from the federal government for the Medicaid program. That is enough to cover all the individuals that we have currently enrolled and that we expect will continue to be enrolled in the plan.
Is it a general sense that this is a good deal for Michiganders?
Well, there's no question that it's a good deal for Michiganders in terms of how many people we're now providing health insurance to who never had health insurance before for a relatively low cost. That's really a very small state contribution to provide that much health coverage for people.
That $100 million needs the okay of the legislature. And don't we still have quite a few lawmakers who were against this thing completely in 2013? What's to keep them from jamming up the governor's request for this $100 million?
Well, it does require the approval of the legislature. And there certainly are some legislators who've said, well, we need to look at it and we're not sure that we want to approve this. But I do think that the majority of the legislators are going to support this proposal because the state is still getting savings from the general fund as a result of this federal contribution. In the past, the state had to pay for a lot of services through general fund dollars, particularly mental health services, that are now being covered by Medicaid with federal dollars.
Do we have an idea of how much the savings are?
The savings, we think, are more than that $100 million that the state will have to pay for the expansion of Medicaid this year. In fact, we think the state continues to save money until about 2020, until we really drop to that 90% state-federal contribution level.
And then where will we be then?
And then the state probably is going to be paying a little bit more than the savings that we're netting. But again, relatively low cost for people who are getting coverage. We estimated when Healthy Michigan started that by the time we get to 2020, it would cost the state about $62 for every person that gets covered under the Healthy Michigan plan.
What happens, though, if the governor doesn't get his request and they do jam it up? What happens to Healthy Michigan? Let's just say at some point along this process, there's a legislature, whether it's this year or one of the future years, where they just say no.
Then the Healthy Michigan plan would end and you would have these 600,000 people who now have health insurance coverage not covered in the future. There's a little bit of a time period here. It wouldn't end until April of that fiscal year, but it would end.
While we have you here, I want to talk about the governor's request for more Medicaid coverage for Flint residents under 21 and pregnant women exposed to that lead poisoned water. The governor's office is saying that'll be about 15,000 more Flint people getting more Medicaid coverage. What would that go for?
He has talked about, in particular for that population, covering more care management services, more nutrition counseling, really some of those medical needs and testing needs that people will have in Flint as a result of that lead exposure.
I'm kind of curious if we could get some context. How often has there been a request like this to expand Medicaid in such a very specific way?
That is a very unusual request, but it has happened before. We've seen requests like that after 9/11 in New York City for special needs there. We've also seen kind of a similar request in Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina. So there was a special period where more people got Medicaid coverage in Louisiana. So it's kind of similar to that.
And what's the process? How they determine who's in and who's out?
In the waiver, this is something that has to be filed with the federal government where the state requested an expansion of the Medicaid program. They specified that anyone up to 400% of poverty would get covered, up to age 21 or pregnant women would get covered. So they defined the population that would be covered without having to pay the cost of that coverage. That's detailed in the proposal to the federal government. They actually also would allow people who earn more than 400% of poverty to be covered, who if they fall into those categories. They'd have to pay the cost themselves, however.
We're talking about Healthy Michigan and Medicaid as we talk with Marianne Udall-Phillips with the Center for Healthcare Research and Transformation. Marianne, let's turn to mental health for a minute here. The governor's budget proposes privatizing the state's nearly $2.5 billion mental health system and turn it over to Medicaid HMOs. What is it he's proposing here?
Let me clarify a little bit of what we think he's proposing, and this would not take effect until the end of 2017 in his budget proposal, so there's a lot of time to work out details. But he's actually proposing using the Medicaid health plans as sort of the fiscal intermediary to get the funds for mental health services for people who are severely mentally ill. We think that they actually still would contract with community mental health agencies, so the public sector, but rather than having the funds go to a group as it does now that is a public sector group, these prepaid health plans, it would go to the Medicaid HMOs to disperse the funds, and some of those funds would probably go to Medicaid managed care.
Why add a middleman?
Well, there is already a middleman. That middleman is a group of public agencies today. He's really substituting that middleman for the Medicaid managed care plans. And the Medicaid managed care plans made the argument that they're taking care of patients for their medical care and for a whole range of services. And they feel that it would be better and more efficient if they could care for the full patient, including their mental health services. Again, we still think that they would have to contract with community mental health agencies. We don't think they would go away, but it would be a very different structure. The health plans argue that it's a more efficient structure. The community mental health agencies do have a lot of concerns, however, about that plan.
Spell those out. What kind of concerns do they have? Because I'm really wondering, bottom line, what this means for patients and their families.
Well, the community mental health agencies feel that the Medicaid health plans are not necessarily knowledgeable enough about the severity of mental illness to really be able to deal with the complexity of the care that those patients need. For many, many years, community mental health agencies have been the responsible party for dealing with people with very severe schizophrenia, bipolar illness, really very serious mental health needs. They feel like they have the networks and the complexity to deal with that patient population. They're concerned that the managed care plans do not. Again, the managed care plans think that you really need to work with patients for the full continuum of care that they need. So they argue that you've got to marry the physical health and the mental health services. So it's a debate.
I know that the Michigan Association of Health Plans, among others, has been lobbying for that change. What do you feel about this?
Well, I think that there are merits on both sides. And I do think it is an interesting proposal. I think the two groups need to sit down and talk together because I think there is a point to be made about needing more coordination and integration of care between physical health and mental health. And the systems have worked pretty independently in the past. We're trying to bring some of those systems together with a program for dually eligible people, people who have Medicaid and Medicare coverage. Frankly, it's not working very well right now. We haven't seen the data systems in place that need to happen. We haven't seen a lot of patients wanting to enroll in that program. So we have a lot of kinks to work out of something we're already trying. Might be good to work out those kinks first before we try something very big in the mental health space. We know we have real capacity issues in Michigan with mental health care. We don't have enough providers. We need much more support from the mental health system in Michigan. So I think there needs to be a lot of dialogue about how this would work and really make sure that we have the capacity and the systems in place to care for people.
I know there are those who are going to be saying, is it more about the streamlining and looking at the continuum of care, or is it about saving millions for the state?
Well, we haven't seen the dollars yet, so I think there's probably both at play here. I do think there's been an argument made that it could be more efficient and that would save money. And that would be good if the money went to caring for people, right? Because we really need to be investing more in mental health services for people. We don't have enough funds in the system now to really provide the mental health services that we need.
No, and we see people winding up in prisons because there's no place for them.
Exactly. Yeah. So if we could free up dollars to provide more mental health care, that would be a great thing. But we need a lot more details, and I think there needs to be a lot more dialogue about how this would work.
Because it does seem that privatizing the care of some of our most vulnerable citizens really could be fraught with a lot of problems. I mean, we saw what happened when the state contracted with Aramark, you know, let's privatize and serve the food in our prisons. That was a debacle. In Flint, we're seeing what many argue is the result of managing government like a bottom line business. So in your view, how do we balance cost containment with providing appropriate and effective mental health care?
Right. Very, very important questions. I think in this case, it isn't totally about privatizing the system. I do think the public mental health system has to be core and has to be part of this system. They have the capacity to serve this population. So we have to really see that that system is strengthened in this new approach. I think there can be a lot to be added by bringing the mental health networks and systems together with managed care. They do need to coordinate their services better. This could be a way to do that, but we have to make sure that that core care for people through the public mental health system is maintained and really expanded.
Marianne Udall-Phillips is director of the Center for Healthcare Research and Transformation. Always great to talk with Marianne. Thanks.
And you too.